This is a Sporting Discussion, your podcast talking sports of all sorts. I am AJ Mithen. Good to be back here in the warm, comfortable surrounds of ASD Stadium with the good man Andrew Donison. Andrew, hello.
Salubrious surrounds of ASD Stadium. We've had a renovation. It's looking schmick.
Yeah, we've had some time away. We've been doing our solo side projects. How are you feeling? You happy to be back?
Yeah, I'm rejuvenated, regenerated. I've been able to express my artistic integrity in a different way. You don't let me fly, so I have to go and do my electronic remix. Yeah. For a little while. I was in the bedroom for 3 weeks just doing that.
Remember, rules control the fun. This week, we're going to be talking cricket rights, AFL, Israel Folau, and the expression of said personal expression, like you said just before, Andrew, and a few other things. We're pretty much freestyling it this week just to get back into the swing of things. Plus, we had a few tweets on topics that people wanted to talk about, so we're going to do that.
AJ, I think we should get right into it with something that we spoke about a little while ago around the Winter Olympics, and it's Commonwealth Games, and it's Emily Seabomb. Emily Seabomb blaming or suggesting that the media narrative had an impact on her performance and also her own personal mental state, I imagine, as well, when she won a silver medal. She finished 0.03 of a second behind the gold medalist.
Yeah, who is the world record? Oh, what's her name? Massey, I think it is, from Canada. The world record holder and current world champion. So
right.
There's no shame in losing by less than a fingernail to the best
in the world. No. And then
So we think.
And then the following night when she got a bronze medal behind the same Canadian, the narrative again was, missed out on gold. So we talked about this in the Winter Olympics when a lot of the competitors, like, they're chuffed to get second, they're chuffed to get third, and people were going, oh, sweet, we got bronze, that's great. And James Magnussen came out and said, well, this is a bit ridiculous. Like, why aren't these people getting judged like we do and getting panned for not bringing home the gold?
And I remember us saying at the time, it's because in the Winter Olympics, it's a much more right-on collegiate, everyone has a good time kind of atmosphere, which I thought was happening at the Commonwealth Games.
Well, it has been.
But not as much as we thought, because Emily Seabomb, when talking about the media coverage of her silver medal, said that it knocked her confidence around and that she felt unappreciated. She felt the swim was unappreciated. And I guess she substituted all of Australia for media.
Yeah, exactly. She's got, I felt lacking in confidence. Oh, sorry. For me, it was like downgrading my achievement.
Downgrade.
Like, silver wasn't good enough, but I know I did the best race I could.
Do you know what, though? She's got form. We need to be careful here because we're talking about elite athletes who have done wonderful things, and Emily Seabomb is a gun, and we all know that.
She's won, I think she's actually now won more than 13 Com Games medals.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But good ridiculous, not bad ridiculous. But she's got form in being affected by outside influences.
Oh, really?
In the last Olympics, she was told by her coach to stop reading social media because it was affecting her her confidence, her state.
Yes. And she actually stated that in the last couple of days when she was talking about this.
Yeah,
and
she brought it up herself. Yeah.
I needed to get off social media. Yeah. It's really interesting.
Fair enough too, because we're pretty feral on social media.
Oh, yeah. You read what people are writing, and you couldn't help but take some of it to heart as well. But so I've been thinking about this, and yes, there are some people who are world champions and world record holders who, when they get to the final, they don't win.
That's life.
Exactly. Like, if that was not the case, then the same person would win all the time. And that's impossible because eventually they've got to slow down.
Yeah, eventually so they won't.
Someone is going to overtake you. If you're not the best in the world and you perform better than anyone else on that day, good on you. Well done. So I reckon initially I was more of the, you should be doing, like, if you're the best.
Get over it. And
well, yeah, just, you know.
Toughen up sort of talk. Or
yeah, like, you know, you probably should have done a bit better. But now I'm just like, you know what? People are doing the best they can. So,
well, yeah.
if you happen to lose by 0.03 of a second...
that's good. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's a lot faster than I could go.
I've actually thought about this...
I'm flogger at floating, though.
I've thought about this, and just in terms of the mental side of a gold, a silver, and a bronze medal, and how a gold medal is great, a silver medal is almost seen as losing the gold, and a bronze medal is seen as beating everyone else to get that last medal. Yeah. So a gold and a bronze are probably celebrated more than a silver by some.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair.
But I've got to say, you know, good on them. Whether calling out the media like James Magnussen did, like Emily Seebohm did, to say, hey, guys, we're doing our best here, is the best way to go about it. I don't know. Magnussen calling them out after he was panned for his preparation.
Yeah.
I think that's a bit off.
But Seebohm, he went in there calling himself the missile, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he went into that Olympics chest fully out, acting like he was going to get the job done, and then the job was not done.
Yeah, so I don't know about that, but he certainly didn't have the best preparation. Like they were going around, they were knick-knocking. They were knocking on people's doors and running away like little kids. So they weren't preparing the best. But from what I can gather, Emily Seebohm prepared the best that she could, did the best that she could, and didn't win. So if you prepare and you get yourself in the best position...
Yeah, if you do everything you can.
Yeah, then it should be well done. I've got another one for you, which is similar to this, AJ, and now it might not have as much relevance because of what transpired afterwards, but Kate Campbell and Bronte Campbell. Kate Campbell, the absolute superstar, Bronte Campbell, who has pretty much lived in her sister's shadows, becoming second to her quite a lot. Nathan Templeton on the Channel 7 coverage after Kate beat Bronte in one of the races.
Yeah.
Kate had to go off and prepare for another race, and so he had Bronte, and he said, look, I don't like asking this, excuse me, in front of your sister, but it's just us now, so how does it feel always coming second to your sister? And Bronte actually handled it really well. She's just going, oh, look, that's actually a really good question. It's tough not winning, but you know what? If someone's going to beat me, I'd probably prefer it to be my sister.
Yeah.
So that was, and then she came out.
She did beat her.
Exactly. She came out and won. And then she took Kate's spot in the relay as well. And she turned around a deficit in the last leg to win. So that, I think, is another fascinating thing. It's focusing on the, oh, mate, you came second. You always come second. What's up with that?
Yeah, that's pretty typical. Typical Aussie, like you said. It's disappointing.
Anyway, is it swimming?
But good things are happening.
It is, but I just want to quickly say, is it swimming? Because we've spoken over the past 20 years about the fact that swimming just gets so much coverage in Australia.
Actually, Australia's probably, I think it's the only country in the world where swimming is televised on a main channel in prime time.
For qualification events.
I've always found that a bit weird. I know, I bet there's people out there who love swimming. I'll watch it when it's a massive tournament.
But yep.
It doesn't float my boat one way or the other, to be honest. But a lot of people seem to take it very seriously, and it's like some people hang their collective Australianness on how we go in the pool.
Yes.
How the team goes in the pool.
In the pool.
Yeah.
Because, and I guess...
And just to be fair, they've absolutely brained it in this Commonwealth
Games. Oh, yeah.
As they should have.
Okay. That leads on nicely to another thing which has come up recently, which is the Commonwealth Games Federation considering restrictions to qualification, because we've seen Australia come first, second, and third in the pool.
Yeah.
We've seen a lot of Australians getting multiple medals in
various. What do you mean? You mean limiting the amount of events people can do?
No, limiting the amount of athletes that a country can have compete in an event.
Well, that's a good idea.
I'm always surprised.
Actually make the qualifying events more interesting to watch on a major channel during prime time.
Yeah, look, we've got two people that are going for each.
Yeah. Only one spot. There's two people swimming for it. And what's going to happen?
Yeah. So
that's more exciting than The first six finishers are all going to the Commonwealth Games.
To compete against Jersey and Guernsey and the Norfolk Islands and I don't even know whom else.
Poor buggers.
But what do you think about that? Do you think that there needs to be a little bit of consideration given to the number of people, considering you look at the medal tally and it's just dominated by
the
major nations?
I like
nations.
It for the Commonwealth Games.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I'm on the record on a sporting discussion as saying that maybe the Commonwealth Games have run their course and the complete and utter domination you're seeing from Australia this time around might even hasten that opinion.
Yeah, I
wouldn't miss them, would you?
I wouldn't miss them, but it's like we've said with pretty much every major sporting event. If it's on TV, I'm going to watch it.
No doubt. But that's how you become a big fat guy who just sits around watching sport. That's great.
So the medal tally at the moment, Australia has 137 medals in total. England has 75. And Canada has 44, Scotland 30.
England very disappointed about their showing. But on the other hand, it just kind of shows that they're not really that invested in this, are they?
Well, it also shows something that we talked about, must have been 2 years ago, at the Olympics episode, where a host nation, you look at a graph of their medal tallies, and they always do well in the one leading up to and then really well in their own Olympics because you've got to do well. And they pump a lot of money in. And then, the money sort of drops off. And it happened to Australia, it happened to England, and it's happening to Australia here.
Well, just to finish on the Commonwealth Games, because we've spoken a lot about the Commonwealth Games.
We have.
Australia hosted them in 2006.
Correct.
It's now 12 years later and we're hosting them again.
Yes.
We seem to be the only country that is really kind of excited about doing so. Because I know, I think Scotland hosted them, Delhi hosted them, and I don't know. They just, I can't see anything good coming for the Commonwealth Games.
So you think that's
just me?
The luster has gone off them. You don't think that the countries of, well, I don't know, like all of the small Pacific Island nations and
Look, there'll always be junkets. There'll always be room for diplomats on planes who get to go to a nice country and, you know, stay in the nice hotels and get to do whatever they like on someone else's coin. But it just can't be a long-term thing. I mean, that sounds dumb because it is a long-term thing, but complete, pure and utter domination from one country isn't sustainable. Andrew, been some interesting times in Australian cricket of late. Sandpaper, suspensions, weeping, PR, agencies, you name it, pretty much everything except ball-hitting bat. And we're going to continue that off-field spiel here because the TV rights are up for grabs. Foxtel rumoured to have put in an offer, then withdrawn it. That's all I know, so I'm going to turn this over to you. What's been happening?
So, Cricket Australia said, okay, cricket rights are up for grabs. Hey, networks, give us your best bid. And Channel 9 and 10 put a bid together, which Cricket Australia were really, really pissed off about because they wanted...
Well, not enough cash?
Well, they didn't like...
Well, they want to split their products.
I think that they wanted to have, whether they wanted it like this year where Channel 9 does one, Channel 10 does another, and so they can use both of them and get a heap of money from both. But them coming together, pissed off pissed off Cricket Australia because they weren't getting anywhere near as much money as they thought they would. So Cricket Australia said, nah, run along, come back with something better. And it was David Peaver.
That's a pretty gutsy move because sports rights around the world are on the way down.
So
telling someone to go away until you bring them a lot more cash is a pretty gutsy move.
What was even better than that, David Peaver, the chairman of Cricket Australia, you know how CBS in the US have taken over Channel 10?
Yes.
He said to the CBS executive, Armando Nunes, that 10 had completely messed this up, and he told them for the Channel 10, the native, the Australian Channel 10 people, to just get out and not be involved. He said, I don't want to deal with them. So then something happened on the field which put the cricket rights in a different light and put the value of the cricket rights.
Oh, the value plummeted, didn't it?
Yeah. Yes. So less than a week before the sandpaper incident was when they said, nah, run along, come back with a much bigger offer. Now, Channel 9 and 10 have just put in a new bid in the last couple of days, $150 million per year for 6 years. And that would mean that Channel 10 keeps the Big Bash and they get the international T20s and the one-day matches, and Channel 9 only then have the test matches. So Channel 9 have recently taken the tennis off Channel 7, so they've got less time in the summer to put the cricket on. So that makes sense. But as you said, Foxtel, they actually came with a bid of between 160 and 170 million a year. So more than the 9 and 10 bid.
Yeah. They wanted everything, didn't they?
Yeah, they wanted everything. And then they withdrew that bid because I don't think they're allowed. Like the anti-siphoning.
Yeah, there's rules. There's laws around what can be exclusive for pay television, and it's like the Ashes and home tests are on the anti-siphoning list, so they can't be exclusive to pay television. But pay television can, well, this is my understanding, pay TV can buy the rights and then either on-sell them or simulcast them.
Ah, okay, right. And
that may well be one for the research division.
Yeah, imagine that though. Like they buy the rights and then sell it for $30 million to Channel 9. They start sort of getting it for less than what they
would pay. Good way for them to get their own back for how things have been going the other way.
But I find it interesting the Channel 10 are going to keep the short form and Channel 9 the long form. So Channel 10 have done really well with the Big Bash since taking it over from Foxtel.
Yeah, they've made it their own.
Yeah, and I wonder whether the interest in international T20 and then the interest in international 50-over cricket is enough for them to be able to drag people to watch it, because they've got this really good commentary team for the 20 overs, the domestic 20 overs. Everyone loves them. Can that bring people back to the international 50 over competition?
Oh, I don't know. 50 over cricket is so boring.
But yeah, exactly. And so the commentary that Channel 10 have done with the 20 over, will that even be able to cross over to the 50 over? They've got to change their style.
That'll be coming down after about 20 overs, obviously. Yeah. They can't get too excited because you've got 30 overs of people just tapping the ball around and walking singles.
Here's one.
You can't make that very exciting.
Here's one for you, AJ. It is about Channel 9 taking the tennis.
Yes.
So 7 seemingly are not going to have any summer sport. Does that mean that they can then bring the AFLW season forward? Does it mean that they can really promote AFLX? Are they going to put their eggs in another sporting basket?
Probably.
They'd have to.
I think they could. But I think they're going to use their extra channels for it. I'm not big on the idea of bringing AFLW forward.
Yep.
Because it clashes with the tennis even more. And it's also like 40 degrees every bloody day. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of that. But I think they've got all the channels. If they're going to buy something, I mean, if you want someone to use your whole suite of products, then that's probably the way to do it. We've spoken about it. Everyone has access to minor channels now.
Yes.
All you need to do is buy a big sport, like the Channel 7 are doing with the AFL right now, deferring it to 7 Mate or 7 2, whichever one it is, which then brings up the whole high def versus standard def argument, but that's an argument for 1997 here in Australia. there's plenty of time to do it, plenty of spaces to do it, and it's not going to cost them that much cash.
No, and I think that this is almost an opportunity. I would love for Channel 9 and Channel 10 to go, you know what? We're also going to have the domestic cricket. So you remember the Mercantile Mutual Cup, and people would watch that and try and watch Steve Waugh hit the Mercantile Mutual sign. Yeah. Play that again. Play that on TV. Play the Sheffield Shield. It's going to cost you nothing to put it on, which... But it's going to be there, and
yeah, just, it's sport. Like we say every week, sports on TV, someone will watch it.
I wonder if there's going to be any thoughts of pay-per-view. So there's no talk here of Telstra or Optus getting involved, like there has been in the EPL and the AFL in recent times. So do you think that's Channel 9, or sorry, do you think that's cricket lagging a bit behind, or...
Look, I'd be surprised if pay-per-view is really touchy in Australia.
Mm.
You saw what happened with Optus when they took the English Premier League
yep.
offline, so to speak. I wouldn't want to be the one who tries to start doing that.
So I reckon
There's some merit in having a pay-per-view, like AFL season, NRL season, something like that, which already exists. You can go to their website and say, I want to watch this game, and you pay like $6.90 or whatever it is, and off you go.
Yep.
That works, but for exclusive rights and then to do that, I'm not convinced Australia's not quite mature enough for that.
Well, speaking of mature, we've spoken about the NBA before and how they've got their alert that says, hey, this game's close, there's 2 minutes to go, pay 50 cents and watch it. Yeah. You could do that with Big Bash matches. Hey, there's 5 overs to go and this team needs 40 runs, pay $1 and watch the end of it. Or this guy's hit 20 runs off the first over.
Yeah, he's closing in on a ton.
Yeah.
Look, like I said, there's merit to it, but I just don't think Australia's ready to handle it.
AJ, there is something that happened in rugby / media / social media over the last couple of last week or so, and it is Israel Folau being asked a question which related to his religious beliefs. He's a deeply religious man,
yep,
but it also related to sexuality. And the beliefs that he has are not necessarily shared by everyone. That they would be shared by some. And he's copped an absolute panning for basically saying that homosexuals should go to hell.
Yeah, that's what he believes.
Yeah.
That's a genuinely held religious beliefs.
Yeah.
Unless they repent of their sins and turn to God, gay people are going to go to hell, according to Israel Folau. I think you and I are going to come at this from different angles.
Okay.
Because you're horribly offended by all of this, aren't you?
I think that what he's saying is disgusting and wrong. I don't think that people should be...
But why is it disgusting? Because it's a genuinely held religious belief that has been around for centuries, thousands of years.
Yeah, well, no, so it's not just... So it's not him. It's the belief that has been around for hundreds of years that a certain type of person will go to hell for what they are.
Yeah.
And the fact that Israel Folau can't look at nuances in... Or sorry, can look at nuances... In some instances, like a lot of religious people will, but in other circumstances, just go, no, gay people, go to hell. I'm not having that.
What evidence do you have of Israel Folau doing that?
What, saying that...
Of doing one thing...
Gay people just... Oh, no, I'm not saying that Folau. I'm saying in general, there is, people don't...
So so basically, like a lot of other people in this argument, you are taking out your disagreement with the religion... on the guy who said it.
Oh, I'll start again. He said that gay people should go to hell.
Yes.
No, I'm not having it.
You disagree that they should go to hell.
That's, you can't say that. Like, that's just...
All right, now why can't you say it?
because it's completely disrespectful to a group of people. Like, you should.
What should he do with his religious beliefs?
He should maintain his internal religious beliefs, realize that everything that he says is going to be reported on, judged, and he should know that if he's been asked a question like that, just don't. Well, he shouldn't have that belief.
Oh, wow. Now we're getting somewhere. So he shouldn't have that belief.
Of course not.
What would have happened if someone else had said something the opposite, in that all Christians must be killed or burned or something like that?
You can't.
Because
no,
that
can't.
Seems to be that.
Yeah, but you can't have that belief.
You
either.
Seem to be able to say that and get away with it these days in Australia.
Well, I don't think you should. I think that's disgusting. It's equally as abhorrent.
True. And it is equally abhorrent. But that's not how Folau is being treated, is it? He's finding himself in. He had to go and meet with Rugby Australia today to discuss the comments and his defence of it, saying this is what I believe. You know, I'm not going to change what I believe, so like it or lump it.
Which players have come out and said, "Oh, all Catholic people or all Christian people should go to hell"?
Well, quite a few around the world, but
specific instance, like where's an example of that? Because you just said that people have been able to say that. Like, if Folau, no one should be able to say anything.
No, people can say whatever they like, but where it's getting interesting with Folau is just the absolute pile on, and all of a sudden he has to go and meet with the head of rugby to discuss his views.
Yeah, because his views are impacting the.
But they're not incompatible with anything. Apropos of anything, they're just his views. You can ignore him, you can do whatever you like. He lives with it, we don't. But what's interesting is that now all of a sudden we have Swiss, Accenture, HSBC and Qantas, I believe, saying that anti-gay comments are not compatible with their values, as if corporations have values.
Mm.
And now there's talk that these comments are going to cost Rugby Australia sponsorships, which I find absolutely amazing.
So doesn't Qantas have a link to Emirates, and don't Emirates have some pretty strict
They have
views,
some religious beliefs so, of their own.
Sponsors who make all, decisions based on that.
That's like, lip service to me.
They do whatever. Yeah. So anyone who says that a group of people, due to who they are, should die or should go to hell or should do whatever, it's abhorrent, it's disgusting, and I don't care if it's someone saying my religious beliefs are this or someone saying, hey, you're a religious person, so you should do it. Like, it's just...
I remember back during the marriage equality debate. Folau tweeted, "I love and respect all people for who they are and their opinions, but personally, I will not support gay marriage." And he got shredded for that as well. That's reasonably tame.
That is tame.
And he got shredded for it. Now, it seems to be...
Yeah, not by me.
He's a very devout Christian.
Yep.
Very, very devout Christian, which is something that we don't see very often in Australian sport. Over in the States... everyone thinks it's all for the glory of God. And it's all for this and that and the other. And there is some of that here in Australia, but they don't. It's not. I mean, everyone knows that some certain people are deeply religious, like Gary Ablett Jr.
Yeah.
And a group of the Gold Coast Suns and Jared Hayne is allegedly deeply religious.
Yeah. But they don't come out and say that a certain Jordan group Rapana, of people should go to hell.
But that would be part of the belief set, would it not? Would it but not?
That's that. They people can believe. Well, it's when someone puts that view.
So it's
out
when
there.
Someone is asked, "What is your view on this?" and they tell you your view. All of a sudden, it's time to shred them and sack them and take away all their sponsors.
Well, we talk about sports people being role models. They didn't sign up to be role models, but they kind of do have to bear some sort of responsibility. And you've just got to accept that what you say is going to be reported on, and you've got to be a little bit careful with what you say.
I have one question for you.
Sure.
Now, this is... Yeah, anyway. Is Israel Folau's view in the minority?
How do you know? Wouldn't have a clue.
Then why the huge pile-on, do you think?
Well, because it's my personal belief that anyone who says those sort of things, it's disgusting. You shouldn't be saying those sort of things.
But I'm seeing people talking about these comments and calling them hate speech and saying it's bigotry and saying that this is abuse and all sorts of things like that. And that's where you start to lose me. It's just a guy who said what he believes in his religion, and he can catch a ball and run fast. And that's all there is to it, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, fair enough. Agree to disagree on that one.
Yeah.
AJ, you have been doing a little bit more writing than you have in recent times these last couple of weeks.
I have.
Yes.
I haven't been writing about my fundamentalist beliefs on anything. But
no, no.
Actually, what? No, I have. Ooh, yeah.
What have you been writing about?
I am a new weekly NRL columnist on theraw.com.au, which has been good fun. I've got three down at the moment. Hopefully plenty more to come.
And there's one of them that I want to very quickly touch on before we bid farewell for this episode.
Sure.
And that is the rules side of thing. And it's the ref's fault.
Oh, yeah.
And in rugby league, so we've talked about what the mentality of a supporter is, where they blame the referee. Mm. But that seems to have really exploded, particularly in the opening rounds of the NRL season, where the referees were officiating the game to the letter
to the
of the
rules.
Law,
yeah.
And were pulling up a lot more penalties than they have in the past.
And they still are.
But the media lost their mind.
Well, not all of them. A lot of the media are saying, good, this has to happen because it's basically for the soul of rugby league.
Yeah.
It's a battle for a good, clean game that's good to watch, or a wrestle fest on the ground and Ford's diving to the ground and just rolling, throwing the ball between their legs.
And even simple things like the play the ball, not like people making them put the foot on the ball.
It's the easiest skill to execute in rugby league, but it's still beyond some people. Get up, you're tackled, get up, put your foot on the ball and play it behind you.
Was there something that came out from NRL headquarters that said, we will actually be following the rules this year?
Yeah, they were told well and truly in the preseason that the ruck, so when a tackle is complete, when play the ball and the 10-metre defensive line, which is the cause of so much angst for rugby league fans and coaches and commentators alike.
Get them back. Basically, get them back, ref.
Getting them onside is very, very important. So far, the refs are doing a good job.
Yeah, and there has been less murmurings from the people who at the start of the year were really outraged. And I think it's because people have just gone, hang on a minute, just don't break the rules.
Well, there was one game in particular, the Storm versus Cronulla, who are two pretty dirty teams, let's call
them. They play on the edge.
They play on the edge. They've built their premiership winning campaigns around pushing the rules to the point where even the ref doesn't know what the rules are anymore. They jog back 7 metres, then just turn around and run in for defence.
Yeah.
They're daring the ref to call them offside.
And they hold players down
in the tackle. The play the ball crackdown, there's a rumour going around that was done specifically to stop Andrew Fifita from Cronulla, basically running towards the player, being touched, diving to the ground and throwing the ball between his legs so that play could get moving quickly.
Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me that those two teams playing each other brought on a record amount of penalties. It was 33 penalties, which is one quarter of AFL, I should point out.
Yeah.
But the blow-ups came from the Daily Telegraph, in particular Buzz Rothfield, who
lost his mind.
Crisis merchant, basically.
Yeah.
Who lost his mind because this isn't the game I grew up with. The refs are ruining everything. And last year, when the refs were letting stuff go, this is rubbish. The refs are letting it all go. They're ruining the games. Then someone needs to step in. Someone stepped in and they're doing it. And the game's going to be better for it.
Well, it's like when you play Origin and Gus Gould just goes, oh, no, you can't pull that up. It's Origin.
My favourite thing...
Mate, it's the rules.
My favourite thing about Gus Gould is when he gets angry at a decision and then he says, oh, look, I know it's in the rules, but...
Yes.
Technically, that's correct, but you got to, you know, let the game flow, ump and ref and blah, blah, blah.
So similar to that in the AFL, one of my most favourite pieces of commentary I heard again on the weekend, and it was when someone got the ball and the ball went, they kicked it and it went out of bounds, and the commentator, he disguised that well.
No, he didn't.
Because unless you think that you were the only person in the world that knew that he was trying to get the ball out of bounds, and you've just, oh, you just. But I think it was a regular listener, Shane West, said if they disguised it well, then no one would know that the ball actually went out of bounds.
Oh, yeah.
Because they wouldn't see it.
And they wouldn't know that that person put it out of bounds. They wouldn't know that that person didn't put it out of bounds.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite things. Oh, disguise that well. No, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
Oh, dear. AJ.
Yes.
That.
Oh, hang on. Oh. Sorry, just quickly.
Yes.
Did you see Roma versus Barcelona this morning, Champions League?
No, I've seen some headlines.
Absolutely incredible. 4-1 Barcelona led after the first leg last week.
Okay.
Including two own goals.
Right.
That was in...
It's in the Champions League where it's a home and away league, yeah, and aggregate and goals goes
it's
through.
Quarterfinals.
Yep.
Winner goes through the semis. And 4-1, Barcelona won at Camp Nou. Mm-hmm. And that's basically it, usually. Yeah. You don't do that. And then this morning, we're recording on the Wednesday, Roma in Rome, 3-0, go through on... Goal difference. Go through
away,
away goal.
Because they kicked one away goal.
Because they scored one away goal. Just absolutely incredible. We're not allowed to do audio highlights or anything in a podcast, but we will most definitely post some commentary audio because that's got some legendary commentary, multilingual commentary audio from Italian, Spanish, English, all of it. We'll put that on @ASD_radio on Twitter and facebook.com/sportingdiscussion.
And it was an 82nd minute goal as well just that incredible. Got them into the just last 8 minutes.
Nice clean header from a corner. Just incredible.
All right. You know what else is incredible, AJ?
Yes.
Your writing.
Ooh.
Yeah.
We already spoke about that, though.
Oh, no. I was going to say I've been enjoying it. So you're doing it every week?
Every week, every Wednesday on theraw.com.au. Head to there and search for AJ, or it'll be on the front page there.
Surely it'll be on the front page.
Oh, well, I would expect it.
No disrespect to Tim Gore, but it's one of the best rugby league.
Tim Gore's on Thursdays. I've got the best Wednesday rugby league column there is out there. Anyway, what are you up to? You've been still doing your Triple R break.
Still doing Triple R, having a week off this week because I'm going to sunny Portland for, I don't know, whale watching maybe.
That's Portland, Victoria, not Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, unfortunately. So, yes. Monday mornings, 7:15 a.m. Also, starting to try to work out which VFLW games I'll be able to call with Women's Australian Rules Football Radio.
Oh, that's right. Australian Rules Football Radio. I forgot about that.
Mm.
When does the season start?
Starts on the weekend of the 5th and 6th of May. Okay. So the first game that they'll be calling is Essendon versus Hawthorn, but I won't be able to do that one because I will be... umpire in under 12 girls football, AJ.
Yeah, you look fit enough to be an umpire.
Umpired two games on the weekend and I feel great.
Ugh. All right. Where can people find us, Andrew?
@ASD_radio on the Twitter, on Facebook, facebook.com/sportingdiscussion. We've got something exciting coming up.
There is something exciting coming. We can't say what it is.
Can we say that it's coming up next week?
Yes.
Are we confident?
By the time you hear our next podcast, something pretty awesome will have happened. So stay tuned. Stay tuned to @ASD_radio on Twitter, facebook.com/thesportingdiscussion. Thanks again for listening. I know we went at it a bit this week.
We rambled.
You all right?
I'm good.
Yeah, bring it in. Let's have a cuddle.
Oh, don't touch me there. All right.
I'll touch you.
That'll do.
No, it won't.
Thanks, everyone.